Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
I really need to take that part out of the intro. That part about calling me. Because technically you can, but I almost never answer the phone. Because what happens on the other shows here on withinsights.com, most of the other people on here, I think all of the other people on here except me, do readings. And so that's basically what the phone is all about. You know, you call, people call in and say, what about my love life? And they talk about their love life. What about these prospects for my job? I'll tell them about the job. And everybody has different ways of doing it. And although Chief Iggy did give me my first deck of tarot cards for Christmas, and I have been looking at those. I do not think I've progressed to the point where I could give somebody a reading that I would feel confident in. I guess maybe that's my biggest concern, is my feeling that I'm going to lead someone astray. So if for some strange reason you want to talk to me on the show, probably the best thing to do is to write me at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. And let me know in advance that you're going to be calling me, and maybe give me a heads up with your phone number so I'll recognize it when it pops up on the screen here. And perhaps we could do it that way. Because often there have been some interesting exchanges with telephone callers here on the show. I just don't do readings. Not yet. I don't know if I ever would do readings for others. Again, I don't want to take that responsibility of steering people the wrong way. But, you know, I have to always keep, always be mindful of possibilities. Welcome to the show. This is Mud Toe at Midnight. I am Mud Toe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me. And as I already said, this is the withinsights.com channel of Blog Talk Radio. There are other shows on withinsights.com. They're very good. You should listen to them all. Okay, that done. Next thing. What shall we talk about this week? Well, we've got our devotional, of course, which I'll get to in a minute. I do want to update you on last week's story of the dreaded paperwork I was trying to find. And I unlocked the secret box on the air, and the paperwork was not to be found within. So that left us with a cliffhanger on last week's show. Will he find his Social Security card and birth certificate in time for the meeting on Thursday? Well, I'm happy to report, yes, I did find it. It took me a little while. It was because they were both in an envelope from the university. That was I got a transcript. And for some reason, I don't remember doing this, for some reason I had stuck both my birth certificate and Social Security card in this envelope that a transcript originally came to me from the university. So I kept, you know, just going by it as I was looking through the papers. So that's a transcript. But then I happened to be, as I was flipping, I happened to see the back, the open, you know, side of the envelope, and I saw the stamp, you know, the little notary thingy, the impression that they make on the path. Oh, well, why would the transcript be that? So I investigated further, and I found the birth certificate and the Social Security card misfiled, but in plenty of time for the meeting on Thursday. And I would like to tell you more about what happened at the meeting on Thursday. And I was about to say, but we'll put that off too, except I don't know what I'm going to talk about before that. One, I have the devotional. I have what's going on with the housing situation. Don't know. I think I covered 16 and pregnant as much as I wanted to last week, and I never did write my blog entry on it. That's been getting, that's a thing about being here at my folks' house. And again, with the preface, I love my folks. They take good care of me. But there's just a certain energy that permeates this place. It's the house I grew up in. And there's lots of very good memories. There's a smaller proportion of bad memories, but that small proportion is bad enough to get into the holes in between the good memories and really mess things up psychically. Somehow what this all adds up to is I find it very, 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 very difficult to work here. What I need to do is find another, if I'm going to be staying here, which is a big if at the moment, I'm going to explain that in a little bit. I've thought about going to the library. I've only tried that once or twice, and it was never with my laptop, so I could actually do some work. I tried working on their computers, and there's unlike the computers at the big city library I'm used to working at, which have a 60-minute time limit, the ones here in this little dinky town have a 20-minute time limit. And boy, they chase you off because there's people there who need to watch some YouTube. So, but I mean, if I went there with my own computer, maybe you'd be a quiet space and it'd be different. Bad weather always stands in the way. You know, if it were the middle of summer, perhaps I would be more anxious to go out and explore and find places that I might work. But ultimately, the solution is to find a place where I can live independently, come and go when I like. I don't know that my parents would restrict when I come and go, but I also, they sleep. Their cars are parked out in the driveway, and I have to ask them to move their cars before I can get out, that sort of thing. So it's nice to have, it's vital to me to have that space where I can work and turn this life around as I look at my 50th birthday staring me in the face and thinking, I have not done what I should have done with my life, and wondering how many good years I might still have for work and for love. And I think having my own place is a very important part of bringing that sort of doing better with my life, bringing that to fruition. Now, unfortunately, since I don't have a steady job, how do I do that? Well, let me tell you, starting from the time that I lost my job at the university, I've been getting some help from a mental health service. Now, let me explain what this is, as you're all there tittering, you eighth graders. I've seen a therapist for many years, first off to help me with alcoholism and then just help me with life in general. And most of that time, the therapist came from the university, because if you're a student at the university, they assume you automatically need a therapist. So they provide them, and they're students from their therapy college. They have students and instructors who can help you out. An instructor always helped me out because I guess I was probably too messed up to inflict on a student. Obviously an instructor worked with me because I'm not going to relate very well with a student. I might talk to somebody 22, 23 years old and talk to them about my problems. So an instructor worked with me and it worked out great. But once I didn't work for the university anymore, I didn't have access to that. So I asked my physician if he could recommend something, because there's all kinds of private therapy places you can go, but it's $75 an hour and I didn't have insurance. So he recommended this place that's run by the county, and it's all sliding scale. And since I didn't have any money, they work with me for free, and they provided me with a therapist. Now it's not a slap bang, smooth as silk therapist like you find at the university, but it's a very good therapist for the most part, and that helped me. Now there are lots of other services you could get from this place. The therapy was the only one I was interested in. And then last year, Obamacare came along, and I was trying to get signed up because, you know, I didn't want my tax penalties and all that. Didn't need my meager income to be penalized in any way. And like many, many, many people in this country, I found the Obamacare website to be impenetrable. Could not make any progress at all. And I mentioned this, you know, to my therapist, because she asked me, how are you feeling? And I said, I want to throw my computer through the window because I can't, you know, get anywhere with this Obamacare. So she took some information from me, and I came back in the next week. She said, here, sign this. We've got you on Medicaid. So these are things that they are able to do. You know, they have, since they're in the county, they have the inside track with all the other government agencies, and they can take care of things for you. Now, the way I managed to qualify for these, because it would be wonderful if everybody could do this. Unfortunately, not everybody can do it because obviously they'd run out of money if you could. I have an official doctor's diagnosis of bipolar disorder, which I got back in 2007. And I'd always hated that diagnosis. I felt it hung around my neck, you know, because they're always, do you have, well, insurance was the big thing. You're trying to get insurance, and so I have bipolar disorder, and they don't want to cover you. They want to cover you for anything that might potentially arise from bipolar disorder. And that, which, you know, for that kind of, for a psychiatric disorder, can cover just about everything. And then it also got in the way when I was trying to get a job, and you say, how could that happen? Because they're not supposed to ask you. Well, the job was with the state, and the state evidently can ask you things that private employers can't. My physician, again, went to bat for me in a big way, wrote the state letters saying, no, I was not a total basket case. There are some things I can do without having my hand held. But it didn't help. I ended up, I was actually working the job for 3 weeks, and I ended up losing it. Sent me into a funk for a while. But anyway, so my point is, bipolar disorder diagnosis, I hate you, you know, because you're messing up my life, and you'll be with me for my whole life. Well, it turns out my diagnosis of bipolar disorder is what qualifies me to work with mental health services, because, you know, that's the name, mental health. You got to have some sort of mental health issue. Mine was bipolar disorder, and that got me in the door. And it got me the counseling that I've had for the past 2.5 years, and it got me this, what I just mentioned before, the Medicaid. I have insurance. My God, I'm running around getting all kinds of stuff done that's been out there, hanging out there. And I'm always thinking about this, too, because I know I have a number of conservative friends who would be who would view that badly. I was trying to think of a fancy word, but badly is the only I can think of. You're so. They wouldn't say it to me this way. I imagine them saying it to me this way. I don't think I have any friend who would say this to me, you know, that I was glomming off the system. I was, you know, that was malingering in some way, because I'm not. I would love to be working and pay for all my own stuff. My response has always been that, you know, I paid into the system for plenty of years. I don't mind taking something back when I need it. And that has always worked well for me until very recently, when so many things have been coming to me through mental health services. And I start to think, gosh, can I really do this? Can I really take these things? And I guess I have to. I can take these things with the promise to myself that, you know, I will, first of all, stop taking them when I'm, you know, when I'm employed and able to stop taking them. Work hard to get employed so I don't have to take them anymore. And finally, you know, just appreciate them, never take them for granted. So with that backdrop, back in September, I signed up for housing assistance, which is a program over the city runs, whereby people with certain difficulties are given apartments on a sliding scale. So, and if I'm making nothing or very little, I'm paying nothing or very little for my housing arrangements, which was the only way I could have an independent housing arrangement where I am in, where I am now. And I was told, you know, it's a long waiting list because I am a single male. You know, a woman with kids would be higher up on the list, would get taken care of faster. As a single male, I was probably going to have to wait for a while. But part of what got me on the list in the first place was this, again, the diagnosis of bipolar disorder. Without it, I wouldn't be on the list at all. So I was told, you know, it could be, it was going to be a long time anyway. So didn't really talk about it for a while. And then, which is fun, I was on a field trip for work, and the phone rang, and it was my caseworker saying my name had come to the top of the list, and then I needed to start gathering some paperwork for the application. I thought we'd already filled out the application, but turns out there's an application you fill out first, and then when your name comes top of the list, there's another application you fill out. So we've been working on that a lot of the last 2 weeks, and that was part of the thing with getting the Social Security card and the birth certificate. They needed that stuff. But again, it all hinges on the fact that I have this diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And what I had to do was get a piece of paper to my doctor and have him check the box that says I have a mental disorder that makes it difficult for me to do things, to do things that people ordinarily do. And I said, this is really starting to push it now. I mean, although I think that's true, I do have a mental disorder that does keep me from doing the things a lot of people do. I don't know if I can. It's hard for me to take an apartment on that basis that might go to somebody else who might need it more than I do. But I went ahead. You know, I haven't bailed out because it's really important to me to have my own place to live. But I have everything is done and everything's been accepted. The only thing that's left is that piece of paper that went to my doctor, and I didn't get to talk to him first because he wasn't there at the time. We just left it with the receptionist. And it occurred to me today that when I've given him pieces of paper in the past, it's been for him to tell people that I'm not disabled. No, Todd's fine. Todd can do this job, whatever. Now I'm giving him a paper that's sort of the other way around. Now I'm asking him to say that I'm not fine, and I'm not sure if he's, you know, is he going to get that? Is he going to be, you know, is he going to be offended in some way that I asked him to do that? How is that going to work? And I thought, well, I should try and get a message to him, but I don't want to, you know, write this big long message like I'm trying to tell him what to do. But at the same time, you know, I want him to make sure he knows what the paper is for and what the purpose of it is. So I wrote a carefully crafted email this morning and sent it off to him, and I was just watching Gmail all day to see if something came back from him, either, you know, needing more information or, you know, oh, fine, I checked the box and sent it back, or saying, how dare you ask me to do that? But I probably had the worst possible outcome, which is I didn't hear anything from him at all. That's the only thing. It's the last hurdle. So, and I have to, you know, have to open up my heart to spirit and say, you know, this is the thing that I think is best for me right now. But of course, spirit knows better than I do. And so I pray for the best outcome. And I just really hope that the doctor checks the right box on that form. I'll know here in a few days one way or the other. But at least, you know, things moved forward. And I don't know that that's unrecoverable if he checks the wrong box. It may be a matter of being able to refile it. I don't know. I don't know what happens if he checks the wrong box. I only know if he checks, you know, the box they want him to check, then things will start to move towards me moving in. And the next move-in date is February 1st. It might be too soon to get in on that one. The next one after that is 1st and 15th of every month. So I'd reasonably expect I would be in an apartment by the 15th of February, which would be amazing. Would be absolutely amazing. Much better than I was hoping for. And at the same time, I have to pray that this is the right thing, that I'm not taking up I'm not taking up a spot that would be better suited for someone else. I think, you know, I just gave up a spot in July that might be better suited to someone else. So sometimes things go one for one. Is that the way it goes? One for one sometimes? Okay. Let me get where we are. It's 21 past the hour. Let me get to Walk in Dry Places here. Let me again announce this for you. This is from a book of daily devotions for 12-steppers called Walk in Dry Places. It was a gift from some friends when I got to a year of sobriety. The idea of Walk in Dry Places is you stay away from danger. And that's the way towards continued sobriety. Now, when I do these on the show, I don't look at them first. So I'm seeing them for the first time. I haven't read these enough to have memorized them all. And I read them and try and connect them up with either something I've already said or something I should have said. Again, this is sort of a prism for spirit to work, for the words that are supposed to be coming out of me, to come out of me, sort of a check against my just coming in here and sitting and whining about my own troubles. So we're going to look at January the 23rd. The title is Thinking Well of Ourselves. I'm sorry about the microphone. I'm trying to work my glasses, my bifocals, and my mic was in the way. Although there may have been conceit and cockiness in our past behavior, most of us suffered from feelings of low self-esteem. We alcoholics often felt alone and unworthy. Often we had memories of parents and others who reminded us of our shortcomings or compared us unfavorably with others. Whatever our past problems, we can raise our self-esteem in the present. We can begin by forgiving ourselves and others for past wrongs and mistakes. We must become willing to give up any belief or practice that causes us to dislike ourselves. We can remember that our own self-esteem does not depend on achievements or on winning in competitions with others. Despite our failings, now and in the past, we are worthy in the sight of God and are entitled to God's grace. Growth in the AA program usually brings growth in self-esteem. If we think well of ourselves in the right sense, others will tend to think well of us too. With proper self-esteem, we will not be crushed or dismayed when someone seems to dislike us. Our feelings about ourselves will be much more than a mirror of others' opinions. I will think well of myself today. I will not put myself down, even jokingly. I will know that if God is for me, no one can be against me. Okay, well, where do we tie that in? There's certainly the idea of, here's another bookmark in here. At one point I was reading this, and I stopped on either October 22nd or October 23rd. Anyway, I start us off Thinking Well of Ourselves. And that took me right back to sort of that last thing I said about, you know, am I worthy of this place? Would someone else be more worthy for it? And I get that talking to from my New Age friends sometimes about thinking of myself as a worthy being, a being that has the right to expect that good things are going to come to me. I have a lot of trouble with that. I never expect good things are going to come to me. And then any of the, again, something with the doctor, I need the doctor to do this particular thing for me, and I don't know if he is or not. A new age person would think, okay, if I sit here and worry about it, if I worry that he's going to sit here and I think about him checking the wrong box, that will cause him to check the wrong box. I send that energy to the universe. The universe will send that energy back to the world. Whereas if I think of him checking the right box, right meaning the one that works out best for me, right and wrong, probably not a terrific way to describe it in this example, but it's the easiest way to describe it, so I'll use it. If I think about checking that box that I want him to check, that I feel would be best for me to check, then that will happen. So it's a matter of communicating our wants and needs to the universe effectively. Now that's great as far as it goes. I think that there's a tendency to sort of go over the top on that. You know, use manifesting for, you know, massive amounts of cash. And well, you know, maybe you ought to kind of do something for that. I know it depends on the person. There's certain people who work to manifest a lot of cash, but just, you know, they want to use it to make their spiritual business that they're doing. They want their spiritual business to grow and thrive, and that's, you know, where the money would go into doing that, and of helping people and that sort of thing. So I could get behind that, but just this idea of, you know, swimming pools full of champagne and all that, and all you have to do is ask the universe. The sort of God ATM theory, I'm not real into that. But at the same time, you know, maybe on this scale, on the scale I'm thinking about, it's almost the same. I mean, at my income level, just about everything is out of my reach. So if I'm going to ask for an apartment, I might as well ask to win the lottery, because I'm about both the same level of, you know, you get, I was going to say the same level of difficulty. It's not the same level of difficulty, but about, you know, you set the bar in a certain place, and as you're getting above that bar, as you go an inch above the bar or a mile above the bar, there's really not a lot of difference. The outcome is the same. But I'm going to work at my way for now, because it's worked out so wonderfully well for me so far. And just manifest for that apartment, which is what's my feeling is that is needed. What is that? I've been distracted. I'm sorry. I'm easily distracted. I'm looking at the list of sound cuts. Oh, those are okay. Those are programs that someone has recorded and left on here, which I need to do, because 2 weeks ago I didn't have a show on because what happened? Something happened. I broke my tooth and I couldn't talk. So I need to have a backup show saved on Blog Talk so I can play that if for some reason I can't do the show. But I haven't done that yet. I've been so scrambling around about this apartment. But again, now there's only the only thing to do is wait. So maybe I can, again, I'm going to demonstrate I'm worthy of this by starting to get some more stuff done and maybe move out of that that blockage that I feel, perhaps imagine, that my parents' house is creating. Another way I want to prove myself worthy of that space is to keep it neat. I was not so great of a housekeeper at my old place. And to the point where I never had friends over because the place was always so sloppy. So I want, if you know, I'm given the opportunity to have my own space again, I want to honor that space by keeping it neat and tidy. And I'm talking about, you know, obsessive type of stuff, but not, you know, that I'd feel proud having friends over or colleagues over or spirit. Have Sky Father, Earth Mother over for tea and biscuits. Okay, we've run out of time. Isn't it amazing how that happens? Every week about the same time. Thank you once again for joining me. I'm here every week, unless something bad happens, to talk for half an hour about just stuff. So, and if you have something to say about the show, please write me at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. That's mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks for listening. I will talk to you next week. Bye.